German parents believe independence is good for kids and that learning to handle risk, like how to light a match at age 7, that's a vital skill and can be handled at a young age. All of these glimpses into parenting came fast and often for Sarah Zaski. Her new book is Achtung Baby, an American mom on the German art of raising self-reliant children. She's an American writer who spent more than 6 years living in Germany. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's first pick apart the title of your book, Achtung Baby. English speakers may not understand what you're saying with the name on your book. Can you help us out with that?
Sure. Achtung means attention or watch out. And I actually knew it from the U2 album. I didn't have a lot of German when I first arrived, but I knew that word and I found myself shouting it a little too often.
What brought you to Germany and what ages were your kids at that time?
My husband is a scientist and he got his first contract job there. And my daughter was 2.5. My son was born while we were in Germany.
So you went through your pregnancy in Germany. In the healthcare system there, what did you learn as you went through the process of your having your baby in Germany?
Well, one thing that surprised me is that the whole birth process before labor and after is run by midwives, not by doctors. The doctors only come in if there's a complication. So that was a major difference.
And where did you have your child?
I actually had him in my Berlin apartment. That was planned. It's more common to have a baby in the hospital in Germany, but they were much more accepting of my attempt to have the baby at home. And it was a good thing because he was there in 3 hours. I don't know if I could have made it to the hospital.
You had your first child in a hospital, and you write in the book that it was a different process than what you experienced in Germany. Can you contrast it for us?
Sure. So in the U.S., I also had tried to have a home birth, and with the first child, it took a lot longer, and I ended up having to go to the hospital. And the minute I walked through the door, or actually I was wheeled in a wheelchair, a woman came over to me with a packet of papers that she wanted me to sign. And there was a lot of hostility by the fact that I had tried to have a home birth and had ended up in the hospital. It was a little intense. While in Germany, they had me register at the hospital ahead of time, just in case. So they knew that I was pregnant and that I might end up at the hospital. And then all the paperwork was taken care of. And I felt much more that they were ready to accept the risk that I was taking. And they were working to mitigate it.
You were also trying to avoid a cesarean section with your first child. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. When I came to the hospital, that's the first thing they said to me was, maybe you should have a cesarean. And I said, wait, maybe we could try something else first. They gave me a little Pitocin, which helps speed up the contractions, and that's all it needed.
You write that the German language does not have a direct translation for the word parenting. What do Germans use instead to describe this task, if you will, of caring for and guiding babies and children to adulthood?
Sure. The most common word is Erziehung, which means training or bringing up. And I think that's very telling that they don't have the word parenting. Because even teachers, instructors who are not full teachers are often called Erzieher or Erzieherin. So it's the idea is that more people have a role in helping the child grow up than just the parents.
Who are these other people helping bring up the children in Germany?
Well, they're daycare center workers, teachers, family members, as well as the parents.
Your kids experienced more independence, you write in the book, in preschool. What was it like, first of all, finding daycare for the young one and then entering preschool for your daughter, who was older?
Well, daycare is much more common to use in Berlin and in Germany in general, especially by the time kids are 3, almost all German kids are in some form of early childhood education. However, it is like here, it's hard to find a spot because there's not enough spaces. So it took some time. Plus, you have to register for something that's called a Gutschein, which gives you a discount based on your income. So I paid a lot less for daycare for my children than I did in the U.S. It was really quite amazing. And the experience was very different as well. Being a daycare center teacher or a kindergarten teacher is a profession, and everyone is highly trained.
And that contrasts to the States here, where you may not need a college-level education to be in those roles?
Right. You may not need any training at all. I was lucky here in the U.S. There are some very good preschools, but not every preschool is great. And oftentimes it's just, some young kids that they've hired, college students.
We're talking about the book Achtung Baby, An American Mom on the German Art of Raising Self-Reliant Children. The author, Sarah Zaski, stays with us. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you raised a child in Germany? What do you see as some differences, and what comparisons do you see between raising your child outside of the United States versus in Germany? What do you notice about families and the way kids and parents interact? Would you let your child, for instance, do things like light matches at a very young age? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Sarah, what I love about the book is all of these first person stories of you, your children being exposed to things that you just hadn't really thought about addressing, like playing with matches. Parents tell children never to play with matches. They can get hurt. Fire can hurt people. But in Germany, there's a workshop for kindergartners. Five-year-olds put the matchstick to the strike pad dozens of times. What's going on there?
Yes. Well, for my daughter, she had a fire project in first grade, and she came home asking to light candles because she had been taught how to use matches in school. Of course, I was like, what's this? When I was a kid that was never play with matches, never play with fires, we were taught, always find an adult. But that's not the prevailing wisdom in Germany. It's to teach them how to do things safely and in the open so that they don't do things in secret. Now, there is a man named Kein Karavan who started a bunch of workshops in Kitas, which are like daycare centers for 4 and 5 and 6 year olds. To not only teach them how to light matches, but eventually he teaches them how to make small bonfires and, of course, to cook some sausages over them.
And so did you warm up to this? What happened in the end? Did you let her play with fire?
Yes, absolutely. I began to see the wisdom in letting children try these things. Not only do they get competent in how to light a match. I mean, it's a skill. You need to know to light it away from you. You need to know how to hold it and how to put it out. But she had a sense of, look, I can do something, and I know it's serious. This is dangerous. Whenever a child has an idea that she's taking on a responsibility normally, that's an adult thing, they get very serious and very intense, and it's part of growing up.
How do German parents see themselves in a way that may be different with how American moms and dads see themselves?
Well, I think they have a lot of the same fears that we do. I had similar conversations with German parents, their fear about people who might take their kids or do something, abuse them somehow, or get in accidents, or kids that get hurt somehow. The difference is they also have a strong value on letting kids learn independence, so that even though they're afraid to let them do something, like I had a friend who let her kids take the subway 4 stops by themselves to go see their grandmother. She said she hated it, but she had to let them do it because they needed to learn how to be independent. So that value is so important. It overrides the fear.
is parenting that allows kids to make their own mistakes, to allow them more independence like this, taking the subway four stops by themselves. Is that somehow easier to do in Germany?
I think it's easier just that more people are doing it. Mm. But I think the fear is still there. So it's never an easy thing to do, put it that way. I mean, even if you know it's right, you're always nervous for your children, that something that could happen to them.
And you also talk about how your daughter, you finally let her go to the corner store alone to buy bread. And the day that she was able to accomplish this task, that it was really an exciting moment for both you and your daughter.
Yes, I think that's about the time it really flipped for me, when I realized she came through the door so proud and with her change and an extra gift from the bakery workers. They called her Little Princess. And that it was also my job as a parent, not just to protect my child, but to teach her how to do things and let go. That's a really significant part of parenting that I hadn't really embraced yet. And I started to see the wisdom of the German parents around me.
In a 2015 Pew Research survey, 66% of American parents said children shouldn't be allowed to be alone at a park until they hit their teenage years. Most respondents also felt that a child shouldn't even play in their front yard unsupervised until they're at least 10. We're exploring the contrast of American parenting styles with our counterparts in Germany on this Hour of the Morning show. The book is Achtung Baby. Author Sarah Zaski stays with us. You can join in with your questions and observations about parenting in the U.S. as compared to Germany. 800-642-1234. Do you think different cultures view parenting differently? In what way? How do lessons from other countries or communities translate to America? Call in or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back in just a bit. Some call it over-parenting or helicopter parenting. These terms touch on a sensitive subject among American parents. That is, how much control should they exercise over their child's young life? That is explored in the new book, Achtung Baby. We're talking this Hour of the Morning show with author Sarah Zaski, who lived for 6 years in Berlin and came to understand a different philosophy for how to raise kids. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being with us for the conversation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you lived in Germany? What did you notice about families and the way kids and parents interact? Do you think American parents worry too much? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Carmen, who joins us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling in. I think the conversation is very interesting. I'm actually German. I've lived in the United States for many years. I have two children that were born here and that my husband and I raised here. My husband is American, and I have all of my family in Germany. So when your guest said that Germans put their kids, like, on the subway, I put my kids on an airplane in kindergarten and second grade. My kids are 2 years apart, and sent them to Germany by themselves. And my parents kept asking, you know, how long is it going to take you to put them on the plane? And I always had to sort of appease my husband a little bit, but my kids went for years by themselves, flew over and spent time over there to connect with their family. So I do think Americans overprotect their children in some ways, and I did catch a lot of, you know, surprised looks, to put it mildly, I suppose, and people thought it was an odd thing to do.
Well, Carmen, thank you so much for calling in with that story. Sarah, it sounds like you're not alone in feeling like you have to get out of this overprotected feeling that we have as American parents.
Oh, absolutely. Her story also reminded me that in kindergarten, it's very common for them to have an overnight with the children. So they will have a group of 3 and 4 year olds spending a night or sometimes even two away from mom and dad. And in first grade, my daughter's entire class took a week-long trip together, which is also kind of shocking, I think, for Americans.
And so you let your daughter go on these overnight trips, like the overnight camping trip. What did you think about before you decided to let your daughter go?
Well, I talked to her, and she was really enthusiastic about it. And I thought for sure, you know, that I was going to get a phone call in the middle of the night. But both times, never happened. I think what we don't realize is even small children are much more capable than we think they are. They're able to handle these things much better. They're not going to just fall apart.
You also write that a German researcher says playgrounds are a good place for children to test themselves. Why is it good for kids to take risks on the playgrounds? And what is happening on playgrounds in Germany?
Well, the biggest thing I noticed in Germany, probably right off, was that parents do not hover over their kids on the playground, even young kids. Young kids, the parents might be there, but they're off to the side. They're not guiding them around the equipment. And the playground itself, they're much higher, and there's challenges there for children of all ages. So you'll see grade school kids still playing on a playground. You won't see that so often in the U.S. And if we don't interfere, children will use their own judgment of what they can and cannot do. And usually fear itself keeps them from doing things they're not ready for. And I saw in my own daughter, if I can tell a short story here, that we had this dragon at our park, and it was really tall and scary looking with big red teeth. And for years, she would just go up the back of the dragon and back down. She'd never go down the slide or sit in the dragon's mouth. And about 2 years later, I hear, "Mama, mama, mama," and I look up, and there she is in the dragon's mouth, and she comes down the slide. And the enormous pride she felt that she had conquered that dragon herself. Nobody else pushed her to do it. And I think that's really an important step for kids to take.
You also left your daughter at a playground one Saturday afternoon and went around the corner for coffee and ice cream. What were you thinking on that day?
Oh, that was hard. It was very common for children her age, she was 8, I think, at the time, to play at the playground by themselves or just with their peers as company. And we hadn't really let her do that. But one day we were at the playground all together as a family, and she saw some friends. And when we were ready to leave, my husband and my son and I, she was not, even though we were going to go get ice cream. And so we thought, okay, let's try this. let's let her play. And another point that really struck me is that it was more important for her to play with her friends than to eat ice cream. That's how important playing is for kids.
Let's go to Stacy now, who joins us in Sparta. Hi, Stacy.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I was just calling to say that I love this topic. I think it is so important for kids to experience some danger and to play on their own. We definitely don't fit the mold of the pole that you talked about earlier. We have allowed our kids to play in the front yard and go to the park by themselves, walk home from school at fairly young ages. I'm curious if your author thinks that there's a difference between parents that live in more rural communities versus more urban settings. We're in a fairly small town, and I think that gives me a level of comfort as well.
Thank you, Stacy. And Sarah, go ahead.
Sure. I've actually experienced that myself. When I first moved back to the U.S., we landed in a suburb of the San Francisco Bay Area, still very safe. However, everyone drove their kids to school, even though it was walkable. There were never any children at the park down the street. It was kind of eerie that this was a suburb meant for kids and there were no kids outside. Then recently we moved to a small town in Idaho, and I saw that things are a little different here. There are more kids walking. My kids aren't the only ones, which is really nice. So there is a sense, I think, in small towns that it's safer. I don't know if that's a very real sense, because it was probably just as safe in California. And Berlin is a city of 3.5 million people with a crime rate that's probably pretty similar, comparable to one city in the U.S. And yet all those Germans feel that they can let their kids walk to school. I think that even in the city, we have a bit of an exaggerated sense of our danger. If you live in a fairly safe neighborhood in the city, not a heavily crime-ridden one, it's probably safe to let your kids do some things on their own.
Let's go to Jane now, who joins us in Manitowoc. Hi, Jane.
Hello. I just wanted to say that it's not just the raising of the children, it's the whole society. I spent a couple of tours over in Germany in the military, and I would always go to the small town out the back gate because it was just a whole different relaxation. At shortly after lunchtime, a lot of the stores closed so they could go upstairs and have lunch together as a family. And then come 6 o'clock, you might only find the restaurant and the pharmacy open at night, and everybody else down in the city square walking around and talking to each other. And they're taught to look out for each other, the children on the playground. If a stranger were to come toward them and act in a way that might be fearful for the child, the other children are going to react to that. So they're taught to really be part of each other's family.
Jane, thank you so much for the call. Sarah, what does that say about the kind of communities that envelop German kids?
Well, I did run across the idea that most adults will help a child, and I'd like to think that would happen here in the U.S. A friend of ours who let his son take the subway every day to school told us that, yeah, of course he was worried a crazy person on the train might do something to his son, but he said, if something like that happened, I'm sure the other people would interfere. And his confidence in his fellow Berliners was impressive. And I think sometimes we've lost a little of that in the U.S. We've become policemen of each other. We're calling the police on people for how they treat their kids instead of trying to help the child. And I hope that we could return to that.
Well, Jane, thanks so much for the call. Sarah, one of the headings in your book is titled America Inside. Many people remember wandering the neighborhoods with fellow kids, maybe going home when the streetlights came on, finding ways to occupy their time before dusk. That is less and less in American experience. What has changed in the United States?
Well, I think there's several factors that have driven kids inside, and probably the biggest is our fears. We have exaggerated fears of people coming to kidnap our kids, which simply doesn't happen that often. And the other is that we have such an anxiety about our children's success that we fill their hours. They have more school than they did in the past. They have more homework than they did in the past. And we also enroll them in a lot of extracurricular activities so that there isn't much time left in the day to simply play.
So they're highly scheduled now.
Yes.
And when did also this whole, it feels almost like a commodity in terms of daycare and the expectations parents have. They pay a lot of money for daycare and they have very clear expectations on that return on investment. There's almost like it's a whole economy growing around childcare. Can you speak to that?
Sure. I think that most Americans would be shocked at what goes on in Germany in childcare and kindergarten, because all the kids do is play. And there's not the sense that they need to get out of kindergarten knowing how to read and knowing how to do basic math. But then again, you know, kindergarten daycare in Germany is heavily subsidized. In Berlin, several years of it are free. So it's available to everyone. In the U.S., we are feeling very competitive that we need to give our kids an edge, and the edge that we can start giving them starts in preschool. And it puts kids on a wheel towards constant work and achievement that I think can be ultimately fairly dangerous to their mental health.
We're exploring German parenting styles this hour with the new book, Achtung Baby. Sarah Zaski stays with us. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Is a parent's fear detrimental for kids who are growing and learning and exploring? Should kids be able to use sharp knives or ride the bus alone? Where do you see American parents going overboard, being overprotective? Where do you see German parents perhaps being too distant? 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us with your observations at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Tom now, who joins us from Lake Geneva. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. This is a fantastic show, very fascinating. I lived in Germany for 15 years. My wife is from there. And we have a 7-year-old son, and we actually moved back to the U.S. Just under a year ago. And one of the things that struck me about Germany was they may not be as helicopter, you know, ish as we are, but there's kind of a fear of a different nature in the society with respect to kids. And this is one of the reasons why I actually wanted to move back to the U.S. And that is, it seemed to me that the fear is that people, if they don't get the right education, they're going to fall through the cracks. And so for me, I didn't see as much encouraging people to follow their dreams and, you know, they can be anything they want. It was more be safe, take the safe route, you know, because otherwise really bad stuff's going to happen. So to me, there's a lot of fear in that area. And we still, in this country, give the kids the message that, hey, the sky's the limit. You can achieve anything. Follow your dreams. And I really had to learn to really love that aspect of how we do raise our kids.
Tom, thank you so much for calling in. Sarah, your reaction.
Well, I had that same observation. The German education system traditionally splits kids at grade 5 into tracks. And once you get on a track, whether you're going to university or maybe you're going into vocational training, it's very hard to get off it in German society. They value a degree or certificate more than experience. Like in America, you can get a job based on experience, not necessarily having a degree. And I think that's something they definitely can learn from us. America has a society of second chances, and it's a much more flexible society that way. However, I will say this. Unfortunately, despite all our rhetoric that you can be anything you want to be, social mobility, meaning if you start off in a lower class and you want to get to a higher socioeconomic class, is less in the U.S. than it is in Germany. So you actually have more opportunity to get ahead, even in their structured culture.
Tom, thanks for the call. Let's go to Matt now, who joins us in Waukesha. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. I just wanted to share a quick story that fits in with what your guest is talking about. My wife and I have friends in Germany. We've been there to visit them, and they were over to visit us a few months ago. And they brought a gift for each of our children. And for my son, who was 7 at the time, they brought a Swiss Army knife because they said, oh, all boys in Germany have a Swiss Army knife. And my wife kind of had to put a poker face on about what she really thought about her handing this knife to my son. And it's not just a pocket knife. It's a big, thick, you know, camping kind of knife. And so we try to just supervise when he's using it and help him to learn how to use it. And we were camping once, and he was whittling a stick, and he did cut himself with it. No big deal, just a little cut, kind of patched it up, downplayed it, and kept moving on. And I do appreciate the approach that they take.
Matt, thank you so much for sharing that story. Sarah, as an American in Germany, you weren't necessarily forced to change the way you raise your children. And now that you're, you know, parenting them and back in the U.S., do you infuse in your parenting some practices that you developed and honed in Germany?
Absolutely. And using tools and making things is big part of that. Both my kids love to cook, and they started out learning in Germany to cut food with knives at age 4 and 5. And I've tried to progress that to, you know, my daughter's now 11 and she's making full meals and, you know, cookies by herself. And that's a life skill. And I think every kid should be learning these things as they get older. And it's a great value and a great way to introduce them to running their own lives so that by the time they're 18, they can do most things for themselves.
So you're seeing the changes in your own daughter in some of the things that you picked up in Germany.
Yes, absolutely. And we take a lot of time to listen to what they have to say, and we even supplement some of their education, because in Germany, the idea of preparation is not just physical things, but intellectual as well. We don't hide information from them about sex or religion or death or any difficult topic of our past history. And kids are much more able to engage on these topics than you might think.
Let's go to Sarah now in Door County. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on. I lived in Germany with my daughter at two different times. And one thing that really was very impactful the first time during, this was the late 80s and early 90s, was the fact their attitude about babysitters and the importance of the age between 0 and 3. That it was almost, I felt embarrassed when I said I was looking for a babysitter, because there was a stigma that you really, if you're a good parent, you are with your child most all of that time. And I just wonder if, you know, the foundation that lays for the child between 0 and 3, if there's, you know, there's no, they're not shipped off to daycare or babysitters, that allows them to be independent later, because it builds such a secure, strong character. And I sort of experienced that with my own daughter, who's now 36.
Well, Sarah, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Sarah Zaski. Go ahead.
They have maternity leave that you can take up to 3 years. And most of the German parents I met would take at least a year, and sometimes the fathers would take a few months as well. And they're absolutely horrified about our lack of maternity leave. That said, there are different attitudes in Germany towards childcare in different regions. The people who live in the former East Germany are much more accepting of putting your child in childcare at a young age and for a longer time, because they all did it. Their parents did it and their grandparents did it. And they actually see it as a positive thing, even, you know, at age 1 and 2, that the child experiences being around other children, experiences another adult's way of caring for them. So I found that actually a very refreshing attitude.
In Germany, both parents can take partially paid leave for up to 3 years and still return to their position. Many parents of both genders take advantage of this. The country's Federal Statistics Office, Sarah Zaski, found 96% of mothers took advantage of the leave policy. 34% of German fathers took parental leave in 2016. We're exploring the parenting contrasts between the U.S. and Germany this hour with author Sarah Zaski. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is the parents' fears detrimental for kids who are growing and learning and exploring? Are we putting too many limits here in the U.S. on how kids can grow up these days? Where do you see German parents being too distant, perhaps, or just right? Are American parents going overboard and being overprotective? 800-642-1234. Call in with your story, your observations. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in just a moment. We're exploring the parenting style in Germany and how it contrasts with the approach to parenting here in the U.S. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Consider this, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in its 2012 student assessment, German 15-year-olds performed well above average in reading and math and higher than their American peers. Author Sarah Zaski stays with us. Her new book is Achtung Baby, an American Mom on the German Art of Raising Self-Reliant Children. Your insights are welcome at 800-642-1234. What do you wish you had done differently with your children? Should you have given them more freedom, or would you go back and set even broader, greater boundaries? Let's talk about it at 800-642-1234. Sarah, there is a whole section of the book devoted to an infant learning how to sleep on their own, and so many points in there. I'm laughing and wanting to cry at the same time as you try to figure out sleep patterns with your infant son and learning from a sleep consultant who visits your home in Germany. Tell us the story.
Sure. I was a big devotee of attachment parenting, which means I responded to every cry. I wore my children, and that at night, if he was crying, it was my job to comfort him. And that really backfired on me greatly till I was getting up 8 or 9 times a night when he was an older baby. And my pediatrician took one look at me and he said, "You need help," which surprised me. And he gave me a prescription for a sleep consultant who came and observed how I interacted with my son and tried to work with me on getting him to sleep through the night.
How did that go?
Well, it took some time. The first step she had me do was to teach me how to say no to my son during the day, which of course I already did, but sometimes he would have a huge tantrum. And I guess my reaction to that tantrum was not a good one. I was comforting him too quickly. She said, you know, wait till the tantrum is done and he's calm. Then you can comfort him, but the no should still stand. So it was about building a little bit of a boundary with my young son.
And what happened during the night as you were trying to work through this issue of getting up repeatedly through the night to get him back to sleep?
Well, that was about saying no at night. So once we got the day established, instead of constantly rocking him and nursing him back to sleep, I was to start to tell him no. And it took a long time. And really, it was only when I decided to stop nursing, which is a big value in attachment parenting, I ended it instead of, you know, letting the child decide when he was going to end it. And after that, about a week later, he slept through the night all by himself.
Let's go to Julie now, who joins us from Carlton, Minnesota. Julie, go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I really appreciate you introducing the idea of overscheduling our kids. My daughter is 6 months old now, and me and my partner have spent a lot of time focusing on how we intend on raising her to avoid some of the statistical disadvantages she faces as a Native American, well, baby now, but young woman in the future. We spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, the things, the activities that we're going to get involved in, the spiritual practices that take up a huge space in our lives. We've also started to get her involved in the Head Start program here on the reservation to socialize her early, and that's when she was 3 months old, just to kind of give her an advantage to in school when she gets older. Now we really want her to be confident and all these other things. So, and, you know, do well in school as well. And I just really appreciate you introducing that idea, and it really has me reconsidering what we plan on doing with her in the future, especially that statistic that you guys introduced about German 15-year-olds having higher test scores, even though there's such huge differences in their parenting styles and mine. So,
Julie, thank you for the observations and also the cultural observations as well. Sarah, go ahead.
Well, I think it's really great that you're giving her a chance to be in preschool and be around other children. What I learned from my experience in kindergarten in Germany is that at that age, when they're, you know, 6 and under, what they really need to learn is how to get along with others, how to learn self-control. and how to pursue things that they are interested in. So if we sit them down and give them worksheets and drill them, they may learn those concepts earlier, but they lose out on all those other core skills that are really what they need to succeed in any environment. So if you can hold, I know you probably have the urge to, you know, get her Suzuki violin lessons and, you know, get her into Kumon math. But if you can hold back on that urge until a little bit later and give her the chance to develop those inner strengths, I think that will give her a great advantage.
Julie, thanks for the call. Let's go to Russell now in Burlington. Hi, Russell.
Hi, morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, just a quick comment and a question. My family and I were abroad a few years ago on academic sabbatical, and we were in Cuba and Central America for a year, and I just really appreciated the sense of community they have, especially Cuba. It was like it was everyone's kids. I was hesitant, like most Americans, to let my kids wander too far, but they're like, nah, we're all family here, so to speak. And I really felt that, and they just interacted and free played so much more than here you come back and it's structured. And you look in the summers, where are the kids on the playground? It's like, guys, go play some baseball, this and that. But, oh, no, it's organized and structured, and I miss that. And my question academically is, did your kids, I'm sure they took German, and what could you speak a little bit about the educated linguistic requirement in the German schools at a young age?
Sarah,
sure.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Sure. We were able to find a kindergarten that was bilingual. So they had one English kindergarten teacher and one German. And I thought my kids wouldn't learn German that way. But the language of play in kindergarten is German, even though there were English and German speakers. And just through that, they learned a lot of German. And my daughter went to all German elementary school. And she's still fluent today, which I think is just amazing. But she never had any formal instruction, like, sit down, we're going to teach you German grammar. It was all through absorption. And I think that works very well for kids, especially when they're in the stage where they're learning language. They can pick up two very easily.
Russell also brought up unstructured play, that here in the States, you know, a baseball game, there are teams, you have to apply early to get a spot if you want your kid to start in Little League or baseball or some other sport. It gets complicated. Sarah, how does that compare to Germany?
Well, Germans like football a lot, soccer. They're very crazy about it, but they aren't pushing athletics as early as we do. We push, like, we have kids at 6 and 7 playing baseball and soccer when they're not really developmentally able to follow an organized sport. And you can see that on the soccer field, because when there's a game, there's kids wandering around everywhere. It's at this age, it's better for them to play their own games, make up their own crazy rules. It gives them a chance to try out leadership skills, negotiation with the other kids. When adults are running the show and telling you what the rules are, there's no chance to practice those abilities.
Let's go to Jenny now in Viroqua. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Well, I have a couple of points. The first one is that I have been a Waldorf teacher, and I learned in the early Waldorf traditions in kindergarten that the children do learn to work with little knives, and they learn to make bread, and they are very active in that, as well as much of the time is spent in terms of play. And I think it's really wonderful, and it's a wonderful tradition that is continuing in our country. My other point is I am now a grandmother, and I have a grandchild who lives in California, and I do not want her to fly alone. She's 9, and I think sometimes we definitely helicopter parent, and I think our country could learn from these other countries. But on the other hand, when there's issues like 9/11, it does make you pause. And for me, I would rather spend the money and go get her than to have her fly alone, which is just where I'm at.
Jenny, thank you so much for your story and your observations. And Sarah, it sounds too like taking the first step is always a big step.
Absolutely. These fears are very real, and I sympathize with them entirely. If we can put our fears in a little bit of perspective, it may allow us to do some of these things more often. Terrorism in our country seems more prevalent than it has in the past, but if you look at the statistics, flying is actually safer for her than being in a car, and we're not going to stop driving our kids around. So if we can, you know, put that in a box, then maybe we can let our children do more things.
I want to read a portion of the epilogue to your book. You write, "The biggest lesson I learned in Germany is that my children are not really mine. They belong first and foremost to themselves." What do you want people to take away from your book?
Well, that was the hardest realization for me, because when the children are small, and, you know, especially when they're little babies, they feel like they're part of you and that they belong to you. But in reality, they are completely separate human beings. And as they grow into adulthood, they are going to think differently than I do. They're going to make different choices than I would. And as they're growing up, I need to respect that difference. And I think as parents, sometimes we forget that, you know, they need to choose their own path eventually. We shouldn't wait till 18 to let them choose it. We should let them start now to make some of their own choices. And they'll end up being happier people. And ultimately, they'll probably have a better relationship with me if I give them more respect.
As your two children are growing older now and entering their teenage years, what other decisions do you make as a parent that perhaps may go against the grain in American parenting?
Well, that's going to be hard because America is very restrictive when it comes to teenagers. And in Europe and in Germany in particular, teenagers at age 14, starting at 14, they have much more responsibility and independence than American teenagers do. And there's a space for them in society. When they're 16, they can go to Kneipe, which are like pubs, and they can go to disco clubs, dance clubs, to, you know, be kids. And here, kids don't have much of a space outside of school and home. I would like to be able to let my daughter and son have more independence, maybe take trips. I'm afraid for them to feel real independence, we might have to go visit Germany.
Do you want to go back?
Oh, absolutely. Not to live forever, but definitely to visit.
And finally, as we start to wrap up here, do your children appreciate, do you think, what they took away from living in Germany?
Yes, I think they do. They realize that they had a lot of freedom there, and they have such fond memories of kindergarten and school and playing there. I also think they realize that they have an ability to concentrate and be calm in school that they don't see as much in their peers.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sarah Zaski is the author of Achtung Baby, An American Mom on the German Art of Raising Self-Reliant Children. She's an American writer who spent more than 6 years living in Germany. This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer of Mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening.